with Maine's subcommittee of human resources this afternoon. I'm not sure whether the House is in session. They're about ready to adjourn, but we're going to go ahead and begin. Today we're going to have a public hearing on Senate Bill 764 regarding access to public transportation fund, and I'll call up Gary Weeks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Gary Weeks, Director of the Department of Human Resources. Here to visit with you about Senate Bill 764. I testified a couple of times before the Senate Committee on Transportation about this bill, and initially testified about how much we were appreciative of the members of the Senate bringing forward an initiative for additional transportation for the elderly and disabled. And clearly, a need in this state. The Transportation Department did a study which showed that somewhere in the neighborhood of 8% or more of all families in the state have some special transportation needs, something that we've a long time as Department of Human Resources. And we've also believed that the Department of Human Resources ought to be integrally involved in helping to determine the needs of transportation from among the elderly and disabled population. But we are a purchaser of transportation and not a provider of transportation, and that's an important distinction to keep in mind as we talk about 764. In my testimony before the Senate Transportation Committee, I presented several points in opposition to the bill as it was drafted and asked the committee to consider some alternatives. The points that I was most concerned about as we looked at 764 were these. First of all, the money is appropriated to money for transportation, and this bill carries a $10 million appropriation, and if there is a $10 million appropriation in the governor's budget under the livability part of the governor's budget, I believe, but this bill here in particular has a $10 million general fund attachment to it. That $10 million is made a part of the Department of Human Resources, and because of our belief that we are not a provider but a purchaser of services, we opposed the money being a part of the DHR budget in favor of having it continue in the ODOT budget. Now, I want to speak to that a little bit more in a minute. We also were concerned about the change in the method of distributing what are called the STF funds, the special transportation funds that come from tobacco tax revenues. 764 brings about a distribution mechanism that is a grant proposal. In other words, transportation districts and counties, special districts, transportation districts will bring forward grant proposals for use of these funds. And under the current bill, 764, DHR would have a responsibility of providing grants. Our concern was transportation districts today, probably already by now, have approved budgets for transportation for the next fiscal year. It's June, and they're all ready to go July 1. For us to turn that on its head right now and say, instead of using the traditional distribution method for special transportation funds, we're now going to come out with a grant program, would really turn on its head all the programs for elderly and disabled that are in existence right now. And that was, I think, something that none of us, including the elderly and disabled, felt was going to be positive. We don't have any experience, Madam Chair, members of the committee, in distributing transportation monies on a wholly grant basis. And we agree that there is merit for looking at having special transportation districts and mass transit districts bring forward proposals for some kind of grant program, but today we're not prepared to begin to do that. So one of the things we wanted to talk with you about was how do we enter into that sort of change over a period of years. The other thing that bothered us about the grant proposal that's described in 764 is that small transportation districts and counties don't have anywhere near the experience of developing and presenting grant proposals that larger transportation districts do. And in our view, we thought that there's going to need to be some technical assistance and some support for smaller districts and smaller counties to be effective in bringing forward grant proposals if we do begin to evolve through a system that's based entirely on a grant proposal. The competitive nature of a grant proposal, we're also going to have to figure out how we assure stability and continuity in a transportation system that has every 2-year grant application attached to it. Somehow you want to be able to have a continuity and instability amongst all transportation districts, so you're not going up and down in the level of funding. We didn't see how that was going to be accomplished in Senate Bill 764. So for those principal reasons, we opposed the bill as it was presented in the Senate Transportation Committee. There was, a competing piece of legislation on the House side, House Bill 3149, which in fact had some of the same Senate co-signatures as 764 did, at least one member, and that was going through a process of its own. So as I testified before the committee, Senator Shannon, who chaired the committee, instructed me to bring together a task force of all the various parties that were affected by 764, meaning the Seniors Commission and the 04 A and B organizations, the Oregon Transportation agencies, bring those all together and try to work out some kind of compromise. And we had a very short time to do that. We had a matter of less than a week to do that. And we did that. We brought together all those parties, spent a considerable amount of time going through both 764 and 3149 to try to come to some agreement on what would be the amendments that all the organizations could support in a transportation bill. And the amendments that we agreed upon are as follows, and I've given you the full copy of those amendments. They're not in legislative council form because we didn't have any time to put them in that form, and nor did we have the authority or the blessing of anybody particularly to do that. But the amendments that were agreed upon do several things. First, establishes in the Treasury a dedicated elderly and disabled fund. It's dedicated, can't be used for any other purpose than elderly and disabled transportation. That fund then consists of the monies that come through tobacco tax, what we commonly call the Special Transportation Fund, or CF money, consists of any new appropriations that this legislature may approve and any interest that would be earned on the total of the tobacco tax monies and the new general fund monies. All that is in a dedicated...
Senator Fisher?
You're referring to the...
Yes, that's correct, Senator Fisher.
What page are you...
On page one, if you look under... Again, I apologize, these aren't in legislative council draft, but if you look on page one, under section one, it describes the dedicated fund, and then under sub two, it describes the three sources of monies that are in there, STF, general fund that might be appropriated by the legislature, and all monies, all interest earned on those investments. So it clearly establishes something that is set aside for elderly and disabled transportation purposes. The amendments that we agreed to go on to distribute the monies by population with guaranteed minimums for smaller counties. Now, this is where the major change is over 764. And I appreciate the significant difference this is, but for the reasons that I said to you earlier, we find that it's be very difficult for us to start right off the bat a grant program. And so what this combination of organizations and individuals agreed to is that we would, over the course of the next biennium, work on a grant formula that we could bring to you at the next legislative session. So let me go on. So the distribution of any new monies would be on the basis of population. 51% of those new monies, that is new general fund appropriations, would have to go to serve the needs of currently unserved elderly and disabled. With the existing FCF monies, the population based distribution formula would stay in place. That does have a set aside of 25% to award grants to transportation districts and counties, and that would continue to stay in place. So there would be some discretionary grant money available in that set aside. Each transportation district or county would have a local advisory committee.
I know you're going through this, but sometimes I can follow you line by line, and other times I lose you.
Okay. Yep.
You can kind of tell us where you are.
You bet. I'm sorry. I should have started that way. Section two is on page one, Senator Shields, Madam Chair, page 1, section 2, talks about from monies appropriated to the Elderly and Disabled Transportation Fund. Okay, that's new appropriation monies, and it sets out a distribution that, as you can see, talks about $40,000 to each transportation district or county with a population of less than 10,000. And it says minimum of 50,000 to each district or county with a population between 10,000 and 100,000. And then there's a distribution for larger counties that follows. And then on page 2, at the top of sub 3 is what I just said to you, where we say at least 51% has to go to new needs, currently unserved elderly and disabled population.
Madam Chair, Representative, could you tell us what you mean by a little more specifically new needs?
Madam Chair and Senator, or Representative Loken, what is envisioned here is that half of the money would be used for areas that have an unserved client population, whether it's elderly or disabled. So we would have to look at, in the distribution of these monies, we have to make some evaluation of where the needs were greatest in the state to try to direct the funds, the new general funds, to the area where there's the greatest unserved population.
And
we can do that based on data that's available through the Department of Transportation as well as through the Department of Human Resources.
Through a prioritization process then of where the need is, as you see, is greatest. And
I'm sure it would be exactly. We would try to identify the greatest unserved needs as we distributed the new money.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The current money that comes from tobacco tax or STF is described in subsection 4. And that would continue to be distributed under the STF formula. Again, the reason to do that is all the budgets for the districts have been decided already by this date. And our concern was for us to change that distribution formula after all these districts have put their budget out. It's going to just wholly disrupt the transportation system for elderly and disabled, and no one wanted to do that in the next biennium. So we left the STF distribution money the same. 3/4 of those distribution monies go out by formula. 25% are set aside for grant proposals from counties. So there is a balance on the STF side of formula-based dollars and some money for grants. And it's been that way for a while. So that's not new on the STF side.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shillers.
Kind of a general question, but Chairman, when you get through adding these amendments into 764, what will be the difference between that and House Bill 3149?
Madam Chair, Senator George, 3149 didn't have anything in it with regard to the distribution of the new money, It doesn't have anything in it with regards to an oversight, statewide oversight committee, nor any requirements for the Department of Transportation to come back to the legislature and report on the expenditures, which I think is key to the amendments we've put in here, because it requires ODOT and DHR, requires both agencies to appear at least once each year and present to the legislature a report on where the monies went, what they were spent for, what the administrative costs were from both agencies, so that you know whether the money actually went to elderly and disabled transportation services, which is one of the things I think many members have been concerned about, that whether we could rely on the money actually getting to the purposes that it's appropriated for.
Thank you. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if I read this correctly, it appears that with these amendments, it's pretty well gut the 764 bill, particularly in areas like of accountability. In other words, 150% of the statewide average, that's gone, correct, under these?
I'm sure, Senator George, it is, because that was tied to the grant side of grants were limited to organizations where their costs were more than 150%, if I read that right. And that is not included in, it's not included in these amendments. And I should say, Madam Chair and Senator George, we didn't prepare these amendments for 764 necessarily or 3149. What we were trying to do was to find a point where everybody could come to some agreement on what do we do with this new money for the next biennium. and how do we assure that there's oversight over the Department of Transportation on how these monies are used, and how do we assure that there's input before the next biennium from elderly and disabled individuals and groups for how the money ought to be spent in the next biennium, too. Kind of that's what by these amendments.
So what would be the accountability factor if somebody, I mean, if you can't do it for 150% of the statewide average and moving the same folks under the same circumstances, what's the limit? Is it 500%? Why would you folks want to remove that out of the bill? Because to me, that's like a safety valve. It's accountability factor.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator George, I don't think we actually sat down and made a conscious decision about the 150%. The groups, and they'll speak for themselves in a moment, but we're looking for a way for us to bring together the existing SDF money and the new money together to get the best return. And they were willing to go for 2 years and measure the success of the Department of Transportation in distributing these money. I mean, I think basically that's where we were. We said, well, we're willing to let this go for 2 years under more of a formula-driven program, try to measure the cost. That's why the annual reporting is so critical, because that's what the seniors and the elderly wanted, was some way to see how the money was being spent and compare the cost, you know, per capita, and compare them across counties and districts and so on like that. That was the accountability measure we were trying to get into the current biennium, with the expectation that the statewide council would come before the next legislative session with proposals based on what they learned in this next 2 year period. Again, I won't try to speak for them, but I think that's what they were after. So.
You know what, Gary?
Yes, ma'am.
We're sitting up here thinking, we are talking about amendments to a bill. We don't even know what it's about. So we're going to draw back the clock here. And I'm going to call up Mel Zucker, because he's going to explain what the bill that we have the hearing for today is all about and what it does. I think it would help us to better understand what we're amending and what we're doing, although you did just say that this really wasn't an amendment to this or 3149, but we are having a public hearing on 764, and I think it would be important for the committee to actually know what that bill does.
You're right.
And have a real public hearing on 764.
You're right.
So
there is some logic to that.
Okay.
And I apologize for getting you down the wrong road.
Okay. Well, that's okay. We'll call you back.
Okay.
Or somebody to explain that. And if you're coming forward for that with these amendments, then we'll call you forward. So, Mel, why don't you come forward and set the groundwork for us and tell us what 764 is.
Okay, I'm going to do so by providing you with an overview of the present system, and then you can understand the problems with the present system and what has to be done and why 764 addresses a lot of the problems where 3149 amendments don't really do what we wanted to do.
And did you identify yourself for the record?
Oh, excuse me. My name is Melvin Zucker, address Portland, Oregon.
Thank you. If we could just know what organization you're representing, or love that how he fits in the picture. I don't know. I'm sorry I haven't met you before.
I'm with the Oregon Transportation Institute, my involvement in this started, I've been studying the elderly in transit within the present system for about a year and a half now. And during the interim, I was working with various legislators on doing something about the present system and coming up with what finally came out to be 764. There were several bills that went into LC, and then 764 I came out of that, and then on the House side, 3149 was part of that, but I wasn't involved in 3149, and I wasn't involved in this work group that Mr. Weeks referred to. 764 changes the allocation method, and so that areas that have no services whatsoever can get funding so they can establish systems. In rural and suburban areas which have no transit, I would hope that the unused capacity of E&D can be used by other transit-dependent people. The present system, and I'm going to go walk you through some of the problems, is barely managed. It really, if you don't do anything else, you got to get a grip on the present system. I know I was talking a little bit about this with some of the people from ODOT, and it's the first time I've ever been able to get the attention of ODOT. I tried to get this to Greg Wolf several times, and he just didn't seem to be interested because he never showed up for any of the meetings that he called. The present system has no accountability, and the people who are supposed to oversee it are really appointed by the people they're supposed to oversee. And one of the things Mr. Weeks mentioned about these local advisory committees doesn't take into account the fact that the local advisory committees are appointed in the 3149 amendments that have been put in this bill by the very people they're supposed to oversee. So I'm not so sure that we can get any oversight out of that whatsoever. This one thing that is very clear is that this is a problem that is going to need a lot of funding, more and more over the years. And so as we launch more and more into this growing senior population, we must make sure we're starting with a good system that can not develop another what has been referred to as a black hole. Exhibit 1 in front of you, if you look at that chart, this shows you a basic present system. We are currently deriving 3.45% of the funding for special transportation funds and for the special transportation grant funds, commonly called STF and STG. Then it goes through ODOT, and ODOT distributes the STF 75% by a formula. ODOT retains $300,000 per year, and then ODOT gives out the grants on STG. And the what happens in the distribution of the STF funds is that transit agencies will receive the money if there is a transit agency in the county. And the counties with no transit agencies, they will receive the money based on population. Now, exhibits 2, 3, and 4, I want to just call your attention to it because they're actual ODOT records. All I did was get downloaded files, and I want you to take...
Representative Walker?
May I ask a question of Mel?
Yes.
Let's see. You said the areas that have a transit agency, their funds are distributed how, and those without a transit are distributed by population? Did I get that backwards?
Well, it's all distributed based on population, but if a county has a transit agency, the money goes to the transit agency. So if TriMet is located
to
other than to the county.
I see.
So TriMet, since it's located in three counties, gets the allocation from Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington counties.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be able to see that in the actual numbers. Now, if you look at 2, 3, and 4, let's look at 2, and I'll have to guide you through this because these are from ODOT's own figures. And in the column marked STF received and then STF spent, you'll notice some things that don't make any sense. Where they receive $82,000 in a year at Coos County, but they only spend $120,000. And the next year they receive $59,000 and they spend $129,000. And so on. And if you look down throughout the page, you'll see that they just don't match up. And somewhere along the line, there's nobody's even blowing the whistle and saying, hey, wait a minute, folks. Something's not right here. These are supposed to match up. You're either not reporting the right numbers, and I don't think anybody's doing anything. But I think what's happening is that there's bad communications between the providers who have to provide some information to the ODOT person that's handling it, and the ODOT person. There is just no communication, and nobody's bothering to say, hey, something's wrong here. If we go to the next sheet, we find more of the same.
Excuse me, Mel. Did you have a chance to talk to ODOT about why there were these discrepancies in the figures? What was their explanation?
Well, ODOT is here. Mike Marsh. I had a chance very briefly to talk to Mike Marsh and Mark Loring just before this meeting started, but I have tried, as I said, to try to make appointments with Greg Wolf's office, and they didn't seem interested in it. Or at least, he said he was interested, but he never showed up to any of the meetings.
Thank you.
Now, if we go to what I have marked as Exhibit 4, you see down close to the bottom where it says TriMet, you see in 1 year they're receiving $8 million and they're spending nothing. And that's not possible. You know, and obviously somebody is asleep at the switch because that should have been picked up. Well, first of all, the reason that's not possible is that the entire allocation for STF, well, the entire cigarette allocation in here is $5.4 million. And when you take out the 25% for STG, you're down to a much smaller number. And so you don't have $4 million to give away. And here we have shown as $8 million being received in 1 year. So that's not possible. But nobody's even questioning it. Nobody's saying, hey, there's something wrong. We've got to look into this. And this goes on throughout. By the way, the other thing is that in Multnomah County, the only other provider in Multnomah County that received anything was that one provider shown above, Multnomah Volunteers. But we'll get into more of that. Now, Exhibit 6, these are the totals for 6 years of all of the STF money. And as you can see, there are very, very small amounts in most places. And that's because if the number you're looking at in STF received column, and once again, I'm working right from ODOT's numbers. These are their sheets. I didn't do anything to them. And if you look at those numbers and divide it by six, you can see that very little is actually going out to all of those counties. But then when you get down to the $31 million at the bottom, that can't be right because $6 million worth of STF funding would only be $23 million over those 6 years. And so something is very wrong, and the first thing we have to do is look into it. Now, somebody might say, well, maybe the STG is added in there, but it would not make sense to add STG in with funding for this way, and you'll see that in a minute.
Now, where is STG?
STG is a grant program, and we'll get to a couple of exhibits which actually show you the items that the grant program was used for in 2 years, so you can get a good feel for what's involved in that program.
And STF is, well, I'm not familiar with the acronyms. I have no idea what it is.
Oh, it's the Special
Transportation. This is the Human Resource Committee.
Back on the flow chart, special transportation fund, and the other is the special transportation grant fund.
Thank you.
And the grant fund is a discretionary fund. Okay. Now, exhibit six. What this shows. If you look, the average cost per ride in that total cost per ride, that first, the third column from the right, and if you take the entire state, that at the beginning I have selected just what I call high cost providers. In other words, I've gone through the list. And, Madam Chair, you probably remember in the last session, one of your concerns, and you wrote a letter about, was what is the difference between what one gets and another gets? And this kind of addresses a lot of that concern. And I went through and I picked out the high-cost providers. And the high-cost providers, the average cost per ride was $10.91. And then, if you look down below, the state total, when you take their average, it's only $3.76. But when you remove just those few high cost providers, you lower the state average down to $2.51. So we have a tremendous discrepancy in the cost per ride, and these numbers. Like for TriNet, it says $11.44 for 91 to 97, which is really fiscal year ending 92 to fiscal year ending 97. And the current one that TriNet announced in their last rate hearing was $14.88 per ride. So you can see there's a tremendous disparity in what one person does. Now, to me, TriNet's cost should be lower than most because a trip from a small town somewhere else involves a greater distance to get to the doctor or hospital than in the TriNet area where the doctors and hospitals are relatively close. Plus, you can bunch trips very easily in a metro area where you can't do it very well with people in your city or anywhere else. So that's something that needs to be addressed. And so what we did put into 764 was a productivity clause, which gave providers an incentive to try to be efficient. I hear all the time people saying, well, gee, why do I see all these vans, subsidized vans, parked outside of bingo parlors and just waiting for the people rather than being busy while the people are playing bingo, doing other things. And you get all of these things that are always brought to the fore, and nobody's doing anything about it. And so you've got to look into that. You've got to really make sure that you're going to do something about it, because this program is going to grow, and it should grow. It should be much bigger. We're going to need much more money. So we want to get off with a good start. What we need, if I may say so, Representative Loken, is you have to get to work and do an accountability disclosure bill for E&D. Do another one. Now, STG was asked for that, and 7 and 8 are the actual entire STG project for 97 and for 98. And as you can see, there aren't very many projects, you know, involved in this whole program. So it's not a very big time-consuming type of thing. And what it really does show, aside from the fact there aren't very many projects, is how few providers get anything. Now, Exhibit 9 shows the number of providers per county receiving STF funding, but that really isn't true, because some of these didn't receive STF funding. In Multnomah County, for example, it says that there were 11, but only two received funding during the last 6 years that I studied.
I just said Clackamas County.
Okay, now.
I said, I guess Clackamas County, thank you, did not receive STF funding then either.
That's because they're in the area served by TriMet, and the same for Washington County, and the same for Polk County, which is in the area that Marion County gets money to the transit agency. But what is alarming is that the number of providers in the counties that are so huge, how can such a few providers cover that many square miles with the cities in there? We have 240 cities in Oregon, and a handful are being served, and that's not right. We've got to make that much better. Okay. Now, one of the things to make it better is to try to coordinate between agencies. And as we looked into this more and more, and particularly with the help of Senator Fisher, who provided information about DHR, one of the things we saw is the involvement of DHR is so much larger than the involvement of ODOT in this business of providing for the elderly and disabled. And the next exhibit, Exhibit 10, actually shows DHR's involvement in there. And while the entire cigarette tax that goes in is about 5.3 or 5.4 million per year, DHR is already heavily involved to the tune of $32 million a year. And they are serving the seniors, they are serving the disabled. And it seems to me that has got to be coordinated. Now, we thought that the best agency to coordinate it when we drafted 764 was DHR because of their heavy involvement and because of their representation. And when you look around and you go back to your offices and open up the state telephone directory, you will see DHR offices all over the place that are already doing all of these things. So they really are better set up to do it.
Thank you.
Senator George.
Now, what are the sources for actually moving the people here? Is this a separate system, or do they contract with each one of the local providers?
Well, Senator Fisher probably knows more about DHR than I do, a better answer. But most of what DHR does, as well as a lot of what happens with the ODOT funding, is that it is contracted out to outside providers. So both programs contract out very, very heavily. You know, I think that most of it probably on the part that comes out of SDF is contracted out also. Even though it's money goes to TriNet, within TriNet they contract out to providing.
I'm sure.
Senator Fisher.
I think probably some of our ideas in 764 and drawing it up was the idea of a regular type transportation system that would be available, not a particular segment of some type of transportation available to a small particular group. And most of these transportation type things that are listed here are not so specific programs identified somewhere or another as needed to have transportation geared with them. It's not the idea of more or less having an overall transportation situation that would apply in all, a lot of different arenas. Our idea was not only to see that people got the medical, they had the opportunity to use them for shopping, to go back and forth to work, school, in the case of prayers, you know, to attend to the community college or something like that, manifold types of available type transportation systems serving an area. Not that those necessarily limited to that, but that was primarily what 764 was looking to do.
As we saw it in that distribution of funds, most of the money goes to transit agencies. And the one thing that we have to bear in mind is that transit agencies have a lot of other pots to pull from on getting revenues, both for operations and for capital expenditures. And we have to keep that in mind, because a lot of these very small areas, it doesn't make any sense for them to really get involved in a large way in transit, and they can't do it very easily and set up separate payroll taxes for a town like Idana or Mill City or whatever. It just becomes too cumbersome. So what we have to do is have something that's more flexible. But let me just show you that Primet, which is the biggest recipient by far of all of the funds, look at what they have available. And if you look at Exhibit 11, what we see here is that in just between in the last year, the revenues went up. The taxes received by TriMet went up by $22 million. Now, $22 million is four times the entire cigarette fund. So they've got money, and nobody can really say that the taxpayers in paying this in the metro area are saying it's for everybody except the senior and disabled. I mean, clearly that's not a position people would take. So they do get lots of money, whereas other areas do not get money. Then Exhibit 12 shows that on the capital side, that's the operating side that we looked at, on the capital side, TriMet receives capital funding for redoing corners for low-floor buses, for buying the low-floor buses, for buying the transit, like the light rail cars that the disabled can use. The platform extensions that were done were all done in order to accommodate that. And all of that money came, and they were able to get that money from other sources, whereas the most other places just don't have the ability to get that money. It's just not available, to them.
Senator
George.
No, if you understand that right, from the Climate transfer taxes, I think that's primarily payroll, is that the bulk of it?
Bulk of it is payroll.
$66,849,982. And then over on this next page, these are additional dollars that basically rise, we call it a capital. That's $112.5 million in that low, the bottom number.
Yeah.
Five low, four and, light rail cars.
Right, but you see, there are other pots that are available to the large transit agencies that they can get to, that the federal government makes available, for these kinds of purposes, and these are good things to have and to get, but the fact is we have to recognize when we look over at an entire state that these people already are having and getting, and these people over there are not having and not getting. And what we sought to do in 764 was to try to have flexibility so that those people that have nothing can start to get. And as we saw in these SDG things, most of the capital stuff on SDG was going to TriMet or a transit agency that has other sources. Now, With regard to 3149 and those are the amendments.
Senator Lawton? If I may ask you, you said that most of the grant money goes to TriNet, but I didn't see where you showed that. Was that what I understood you to just say?
Oh, yeah. In the FTG, if you look at
But I didn't see it where you were displaying it.
If you look at Exhibit
7?
Yes, 7. Okay, you'll see up there that this is an actual printout of the for that year of who got what.
All right. Okay, I see what your grant study is.
Right. Now,
do you actually, well, I guess there isn't an actual total of the TriNet.
What's all the reason?
The only thing in there, I guess you'd just subtract 67,000.
$7,000. Right, it's mm-hmm. right.
Yeah, okay.
Let's go to Exhibit 13. And what Exhibit 13 does is show how money would be distributed under the amendments for today, or what was in the last thing that I saw of 3149, which is the same thing. And as you can see, in the column, the distribution with no minimums, because these so-called minimums were applied, and they were set forth as a reason to give more to the small counties. But as you can see, when we look at the few counties that are eligible for minimums, and then we look at the distribution with no minimums, and then we look at the remainder at the total biennium distribution, because the first columns, except the last one, are all on the for the biennium. You can see there's very little difference. So that, you know, it makes a very insignificant change. And in that second category, the 50,000 minimum, nobody applies for against that because they get more without it. So they don't, only the 40,000 kicks in, and it kicks in for a very small amount, which really does no change. Now, what's very important is that last column, because the first columns are with a biennium, but then when we go over to the last column, which is the total annual distribution, Baker County gets $24,000. Clackamas County, $52,000. Curry County, $31,000. Now, to kind of put this in that makes sense, the cost of a driver, one driver, and benefits is about $40,000. The cost of one paratransit van is about $45,000. Now, what can you get with so little money when you're going out and saying, okay, you're going to get $20,000 a year, and that's Gilliam, Grant, Carney, what are you going to do with it? See, what we try to do is look at this and say, you know, we need more flexibility so that we can go and get apply, even if we have a limited amount of total funding, we can apply it so that certain areas are able to get enough to get them started. So flexibility is the key in that. A federal DOT report called Improving Transportation for a Maturing Society concluded that 90% of Americans retire in place. That means they stay where they live before retirement. That means they stay in suburbs and rural areas that have a higher percentage of older Americans than urban areas. These are the areas where there is very little or no transit. And that's one of the reasons that we have to look at going outside where we normally concentrate. The federal DOT report mentioned above points out that not providing transit for transit dependent in rural and suburban areas forces those people into isolation or into a publicly funded care, which is much more expensive. So what we want to do is address that. Now, we understand that in the latest amendments, there are certain things that they agreed to that were in 1764, but very little. One thing that they don't have in there is the productivity clause. The second thing is that they, with regard to agreeing to that that statewide commission to oversee, they, if you go to the formula funding, then there's nothing for them to oversee. The formula already dictates how the money is going to be spent, and therefore, where they can be most effective, they become impotent under a formula funding, which gives them no flexibility whatsoever. The second thing I didn't like about that is that it looked to me like there was an attempt to stack the committee, which we really set out saying to ourselves that the best thing that can happen is for the people who are the recipients of the service to be in a position to be heavily involved in the policy of the way those services were delivered, rather than the providers of the service making all of the decisions.
Madam Chair, Representative Lockhart, when you say the committee is stacked, which bill are you referring to?
Well, in the amendments, they want to add two more positions.
Oh, the new amendments that we started?
Yeah, the new amendments, right. They want to add two more positions from transit agencies, which would really kind of push it to where it may be in balance. And I don't really see that anybody can find fault with having the people that know more about the services that are the recipients be in a position to make judgments about the service. With regard to the involvement between DHR and ODOT, the problem I see is that ODOT's had a lot of years to really make the system better and has completely ignored it. It really is treated like a stepchild. Every time I call, the person I spoke to the last time isn't there. It's like an entry-level job, and a new guy is there each time. And it's because it really is ministerial. You're just kind of making notes on how much was dispersed and making notes on how much you received. And then putting it in that listing, which is all wrong. So, you know, everybody involved in this debate wants to really do something for the elderly and disabled. And the only difference is, are we going to do it with a good system that we really can be proud of and be happy to add money to as time goes on? But let me give you the bad news. You know, you're having money problems now, but we're going to need a hell of a lot more next session. And so we really want to get it set up so that the next session, when there's more money coming in, we're really not talking about a problem that, you know, another argument like, oh, we'll only be throwing it into a black hole.
Madam Chair, maybe Senator George is the one to talk about this. I was kind of wondering what input went in from others went into this bill and the formation of it.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about
counties and so on.
Okay, we had a committee bill, which was originally my bill. Then the governor's commission began to look at the bill and said, well, there's things we didn't, you know, don't like about it. We'd like to do this and this and this. And then finally what we did is we decided, well, okay, there were things we liked about the original bill that was a committee bill and things we they liked about this one. And as we began to get comments in from other folks, then Senator Fisher actually went ahead then and did the bill we're looking at today.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been, it's been about a, you know, a year and 3 months or something like that that,
mm-hmm.
that we've all been working on.
Mm-hmm. Follow up? Mm-hmm. Was that then including working with people from the Human Resource Department or counties or anything like that outside of the governor's office? Bill?
Yeah.
The goal that we originally had when we started talking about 764, and I came involved, and I was not involved with Senator George's work in particular.
Mm-hmm.
This came about with some discussions we had in a Governor's Commission on Senior Services with certain folks involved there,
mm-hmm.
that we sat down and we looked at programs that we had, that we had started. I was familiar a little bit with the program because we had one going in Douglas County. It was basically called the Umpqua Regional Transit, but it was designed as a loop system to include trips to some of the local cities south and north of Roseburg, loop around Roseburg, and those interconnected, and they worked in with Winston Dial Ride, Glide Senior Transit, or the Glide Senior Bus, and different programs that we had available to us, and we tried to kind of pool the resources and make the count for the most good to the most people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of an innovative idea, and it came about over a lot of study that went into local transportation issues in that area by several different groups that have been set up, that have worked for several years trying to find some of it, and some of us that have been in the private sector. For instance, I considered perhaps through my nursing home buying a van.
Mm-hmm.
And we would need it during the day, but we didn't need it in the morning or in the evening. It's time, you know, that people might be wanting to go home to and from work and those kind of programs. But we never could get around the situation of insurance covering private people, covering the thing when it was used for the public use and all this kind of thing. It became a real hassle, and a fellow by the name of Pete Mulder was very instrumental in getting this other program started, which was kind of a combination of what everybody else had been talking about, and he saw it and went ahead and did it. And there's been some problems with it, no doubt, but there's problems with everything. But it actually fulfilled the service and was doing quite well as a service to the people. But the problem was there was no real outline of where the funds came from. There was no general direction. There was no, how should I say, fund that was there as a basis of it. It all depended upon county largesse, the cities being willing to kick in some money and things like that. And there became quite a little squabble around from one to the other. And
mm-hmm.
you got what? And then they criticized them because they didn't advertise. They didn't advertise because they didn't want to waste the money. And so they were criticized for not advertising and getting the ridership up, when in reality they were starting on a shoestring and didn't want to waste all the money, wanted to get it out and get it going. And that's been kind of chopped up and chopped down. I have a couple of letters here. They're copies, carbon copies of the same thing. One from the city hall is about Canyonville from Gloria McGinnis, their mayor, and another one from Stacy McDonald, who's the ERCOG. In the meantime, the county then, who had been kind of in charge of it, gave it up to the Umpqua Regional Council of Governments and told him to take off. It's just been a kind of a hassle, but we did get a nub of a transit program going in that in Douglas County, the greater part of Douglas County.
Mm-hmm.
And I would make this available to John, and John can see if we can get copies of it. But anyway, that was kind of the base of what we did. We really didn't go out and talk to a lot of different people or bring a lot of different groups in. What we wanted to do was have a vehicle available to work with as the session came around. We also had some goals in mind. We did not want to see the money spent primarily in areas that already had transit systems set up.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we kept it as a grant program. We wanted somebody to take the initiative and actually apply for the monies and do it on the basis that they had an idea in there that would fit their particular area, not the fact that they would just automatically fall into a certain amount of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be the first to say that probably we don't and have not foreseen all of the possibilities, obviously, in the overall program. But we did foresee the fact that we didn't want to see a pot of money taken and just distributed out over the state and wind up doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we started out with. Now, I said from the start that I wasn't unhappy with people that had good ideas about how we could do this and how we could work it out. However, I don't want those ideas to go just in the realm of carving it up and handing it out equal on a basis of population, something like that, when in reality we don't have that kind of a problem with our transportation as much as we have a problem of individual areas having a need and not maybe the total general population having the same need because of what's available to them already or the close proximity that they are and to travel, where you're working with areas in Douglas County where somebody could get to the doctors in a 100-mile round trip.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of places that have some transit availabilities that don't have anywhere near that kind of distance to cover.
Sure.
So that's kind of the background of it. We didn't set it up as a end-all, do-all, perfect solution, but as a vehicle to engage conversations and try to do it, but with those directions in mind that we didn't want a specifically population-geared thing or necessarily that every county mm-hmm. would apply because some counties might deem that they were being taken care of okay under the circumstances they were and they wouldn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and maybe this is not as fair a system as everybody would like, but what we wanted to do is we wanted to address a problem, not address the population.
Kind of dependent on follow-up on Senator Fisher. If you look at the numbers that Mel gave us and you took the annual revenue that the primate example is receiving from the payroll tax and others, and you add that to the capital expenditures here, you get $320 million.
What page are you?
What I'm doing, I'm adding up this is on Exhibit 12, and I believe the other one was 11. And if you add those up, you come up with $319,849,982. I said $320 million. And then you go back and you look at Exhibit 6, and this is what put us down this road. And you see that the average cost for the state was $3.51 per ride, but either $11.44 or $14.88 in TriNet. And so the idea was is that you reward those who are delivering cost-effective transportation for transit-dependent seniors and disabled.
Mm-hmm.
And the very fact that one who has, $320 million available, there should be some consideration to the fact that this little $5 million or this little $10 million, depending on what we're able to do for this account, shouldn't be rated by the one who has a massive amount of money. And so it is, as Senator Fisher described, an effort to level the playing field. And folks who can't even afford to get into meeting the demands in their community to be able to do that. One of the things I noticed, I went down through the list here, is that some of my counties, it totals like a couple $100,000 for all of them. And a couple of them don't even have anything, even though they haven't seen the populations that need these services, they can't afford to even get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is that effort to try and balance the playing field here and recognize that there's room for some who have tremendous amount of money to possibly share with some of those who don't have even a system.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have just a few more. On this money that TriNet gets, I'm glad they get it. mm-hmm. you know, because we need it. Mm-hmm. But what I'm also saying is that we also have to look at the other who don't get any and try to, you know, help them out. Now, I do agree with one thing on the committee amendments when they talk about having an interim committee. I don't really like the way that interim committee that they proposed for evaluation is composed, who makes up that committee. But I do think that there should be an interim committee of the legislature, which whatever way we go, really follows and monitors and works on honing the system, whether you start out with the basic of 764 or you adopt some of 3149. It's very important that we really work hard to hone out something that really is very good. Now, to reply to one the sky is falling thing that was brought out by Mr. Weeks, is that, you know, we'll all of a sudden get from this position of a formula funding to a grant funding and it'll affect budgets. Well, obviously, no matter what happens, it has to be phased in. There is no possible way you can open up business on day one and process all the grants and leave everybody hanging. So there would have to be a reasonable a phasing period on this. And in all likelihood, much of what exists under the present system would be part of under 764. There is nothing in the bill which says that that committee has to not fund the people that are getting the funding the way they are right now. It just says you have the flexibility to make adjustments, and that is very important. And then, insofar as protecting the thing, the funding, so that you're sure that it's going to get to E&D, money is fungible. It's almost impossible to write it. If you wanted to take a shot at legislating into law, be my guest, I don't think you're really going to be able to do it, because it goes in, and then what happens is money is fungible. So you really have to build in the protection on the oversight committee.
Okay, thank you. Were there any other questions of Mel before you?
Just one really quick question.
Okay.
Okay. No, I think this bill, too, has the 2% cap for administration. And I understand that was, is that in here?
That should be in 764. Yeah, there was.
Agreed upon, but I understand that by the two agencies that we were considering
Yes.
And the reason was that there was $300,000 that was disappearing, that was being used in ODOT to handle the dollars.
Right. The one thing we want to do is become more efficient and effective, and everybody took a very a frugal approach to whatever is being done, because we realize that there's so much we need and we're not going to ever get as much as we need, so we want to be very frugal about the way we spend every dollar. And so the cap was imposed. I'm not sure whether it was a representative from the governor's commission or who, but there was a cap imposed.
One more.
And maybe it can be a combination response, but let me see what we're looking at here. What there will be is it'll be totally allocated by grants and the funding that comes from these sources will be totally allocated to counties and transit districts by grants. And the way that they will receive this grant is to come to the, is it a commission or committee for approval? They would be assessed as to their validity, and that's how they would get the money?
Yes, and
is that
we
sort of a summary of it?
Yes, but that makes it seem more formal than it really would be, because right now there is a form that comes in from the various providers saying this is what we need for this period, and then they fill out some information, and then it goes back. And so what I would see is that most of that continuing with that being the grant application for most, and the only thing that you really look at grant would be new ones and how to establish new ones and get them off the ground. You know, with the experienced providers like Terrius and TriMet, you don't have to really get involved in their ability to provide services.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever you have, you know, and you can budget, you just give it to them like we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it could be that certain times they need more and certain times they need less, even though they're very large. And they're very good providers, but the program really, when you think of term grant, is really for the extensions rather than the existing.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way I would see it. Mm-hmm. And but I'm not on that committee.
Well, I'm chair. Now, will small cities have the ability to write grant applications?
What I'm hoping and what the committees that met were hoping is that not only will small cities have the ability to do it, but the commission will actively go out to the small cities and say, we want you to set something up, and we'll show you how to do it. Because most of these towns don't have the vaguest idea of how to go about doing this. And what really has to happen is that that statewide agency has to make a concerted effort to actually go out and get the cities involved, either directly or through the counties. But we are just ill-served now, and we've got to get more places involved. And so I'm hoping that will be one of the benefits of this approach vis-a-vis the formula approach, which just says, here, take the money, and you know, whereas these people really care about where people are getting services and go out and stimulate those grants or applications, really.
I mean, give them some technical assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have another question. Now, this funding is not anticipated in the governor's budget. Is this in the co-chair's budget? This $10 million?
I think we're having a public hearing today.
Oh, not worth it.
Mm-hmm. So if we have a work session on this bill and there is not funding in the governor's budget because this does appropriate $10 million, that may have to be amended. So that at least we get the structure.
Without the money.
Mm-hmm.
So what good is to have the structure without the money?
May I just say, Madam Chair? Even with the present funding that we have in the gas tax, I think that should be changed to a system that is more accountable and more productive than the present system.
When you change the current system of awarding the money to grant applications?
What I would prefer to see, and what the 764 does, it takes the existing money and new money and puts it in a streamlined way of providing the money. I would like to see that go forth, and it would be terrible if we didn't get the money, but I would still say it we would be well served just by improving on the present system.
That was my understanding. And when you asked that question, I was thinking this isn't just for $10 million. This is for a flow through of existing funds.
Mm-hmm. Representative Walker? Well, as I read this now, first time actually I've had a chance to really talk and hear about this. It clearly says here that the Department of Human Rights shall request and accept grant proposals from counties and transportation districts seeking money from the Access to Public Transportation Fund, and it will be awarded on a competitive basis. So I would think that sounds like those grants understand, from this fund would be awarded compared to the one that has the biggest need, I suppose.
Matter
of need. Am I getting to it?
Madam Chair, okay, you're right on. In drafting the bill, when they say competitive basis, competitive based on need. Everybody has needs.
Yeah.
There isn't a provider in the state that doesn't have a need in this area.
Okay.
And the only difference is that some may have a stronger need, but they have absolutely nothing and need to get started, and then another agency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I'd like to do is we have at least one person here who's come further than 100 miles. So before we get carried away a little bit further, I'd like to have Phyllis come up and give her testimony.
So the current funding is $7.4 million.
Good afternoon.
I'm going to move this back a little. I always talk too loud for the mic. Getting drunk. Yes, I did come more than 100 miles. Senator Kuchum, members of the committee, I do want to thank you for allowing me to testify today in support of funding for senior disabled services transportation. My name is Phyllis Lissman, and I come from Harney County, and I chair the Governor's Commission on Senior Services. The Commission has spent many hours looking at this bill and other transportation bills. In our role as Commission members, we come in contact with not only staff, we come in contact with seniors throughout the state. We come in contact with advocates that we hear the need for senior and disabled transportation. We have become very concerned for the lack of adequate transportation services. That is why we have worked with many outstanding members of the legislature to draft Transportation Senate Bill 764. And we do appreciate the many months that you have put in on this. In fact, I have sort of forgotten just how long it has been. And it has been many months, and it's moved through a series of ups and downs during that time. It was after much soul searching on the part of the commission and several hours on our part of reviewing that we decided that we could support a transportation bill as long as some of the concepts that I want to talk about were included. And that's what I'm going to share with you, and I'm, believe me, not going to take up a long time. There, number one, there must be a state advisory council. The membership should be based on the council that was developed in Senate Bill 764, with the addition of two persons, one from the Oregon Transit Association and one member from the Rural Technical Assistance Program. Then, if the legislature wished to add additional people to address other concerns that they might be concerned with, the commission would be very comfortable with these additions.
Why do we need a transit agency representative on here?
Transit agency representative. I think what we were trying to do throughout this was to be sure that there was representation from different factors. And other than that, I'm afraid I can't answer you.
Did you saw the massive funds that
right,
from the
right.
Transit agency?
This is part of what came out of the work committee.
Okay. It seems to me that the whole idea of this was get the folks who, in fact, are using the services, the disabled, the seniors. They know what services are needed.
And if you look at your bill, you did an excellent job of that.
But it's now backed out with the amendments that have been proposed and add these other folks in there.
We support, though, that portion of 794.
There's also the amendment, Madam Chair, that's it. The alternative proposals we see put forward have two state agencies somewhat involved. Which of these agencies would be responsible for what parts of the proposal?
Okay.
You know what agencies?
I guess I'm not following your question here. My mind went immediately to ODOT and DHR.
Okay. Well, that could be it.
I guess I didn't follow your question. Would you like to?
Well, that may be correct. I mean, you may have hit the nail on the head. That may be who it is. I'll look further at the business.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
What I'm working from here is the concept that the commission came up with, not at all of the amendments. Okay? The council, one of the things that we felt very strongly about, the council should review, and I'm talking now about the state advisory council. They should review the proposed rules, develop criteria, and assist in the development of funding formulas and review grant applications. The council should work closely with the Department of Human Resources. And the council and the Department of Human Resources should advise the Department of Transportation on how to address the needs of frail seniors and people with disabilities. And we see this as a partnership. ODOT delivers transportation. EHR provides services. This should be a close working relationship and partnership, since these would be the two primary players in the field.
There's just one little problem with that. ODOT does not deliver transportation. They regulate transportation.
That's right. And they also deliver. Put out contracts for transportation too, for elderly and transportation right now, to the various counties and districts. And that's what I was speaking to.
But they themselves have very little expertise.
Right, and that's why it's so important that DHR be involved also, particularly in the oversight. There should be local advisory councils that have representatives of senior and disabled communities. The funding formula should be based in part on population, but should also take into account geographic landmass and the percentage of population needing services. The commission thinks the funding formula that was created by the work group would address many of our concerns during this biennium. There has been an agreement with DHR, ODOT, and the Advisory Council would develop a new funding formula by the next biennium to be presented to the legislature. And I'll speak a little more on that in just a few minutes. The grant portion should be targeted to meet unmet needs. The advisory council would advise DHR and ODOT on how to allocate those funds. There should not be a disruption of current services, nor should any current program lose significant amounts of revenue. Therefore, the commission would support proposals that would allow DHR, ODOT, and the advisory council to develop new funding formulas over the coming biennium. These formulas would be presented to the legislature during the 2001 session.
Actually, what I'd like to do if we could allow Phyllis to finish your testimony and then you will
we'll go back to the department.
Thank you, Senator. One of the things the commission was very concerned about was some unintended consequences of Senate Bill 794. The bill restructured the funding mechanism for special transportation so that all transportation providers would end up competing for grants. There was no base funding in 764. And our concern was that this would disrupt the current system and would not provide any guarantee that providers would receive funds. And I'm going to use, I guess I'll use Harney County as an example. I always like to pick on Harney County since I live there. June the 30th, we've completed our fiscal year with our base funding that we get at the present time of $15,000. We add to that a variety of other funding. This is what happens when you're in a rural area. You pick up a little here and a little there and hope the community will support you. July 1, I'm thinking now as a former AAA director in Harney County, I'm thinking as being on the transportation committee there, we just do not have a grant writer to write those proposed grants. It's not there. So July 1, I'm afraid there's going to be a little dry spell there before we can find someone and hopefully persuade them to help us write those grants that's necessary, wait for them to be approved, and we need that continuity of that system. So there needs to be some kind of a combination that there's some guarantee of a funding base and then grants, that it needs to be a combination. This is important, particularly in small areas. Also, the other problem might be competing against large counties and transit districts in writing those grants. It's my understanding that the committee is going to be looking at these grants, and I think of Harney County, I don't know, but two grant writers in Harney County, I'm afraid I'd have to get in line to write grants for me. So this could be a concern. The commission does not believe that there's any current service providers really doing a bad job. What we do believe is the lack of funding has caused transportation providers to make hard choices and to limit the services that they would like to provide for their communities. The commission thinks that probably the only way to solve the current problem is to provide more funds. We do not particularly care which transportation bill is passed if it meets the criteria listed above and provides additional funds. And we also hope that the new system would not disrupt the current system. Wherever we travel throughout the state, whether it's to public meetings, survey clients, talk to staff, or whoever, one of the most urgent unmet needs for seniors and people with disabilities, we sincerely hope that the legislature can appropriate funds to address this need. And I want to close with a couple of personal statements. I think about senior and disabled transportation, and the word that always comes to my mind is access. We have a model of a senior and disabled program in the state of Oregon that's looked at nationwide. But what do you have to do first before you can be a part of that model? You have to get there. You have to access the program. And transportation so many, many times provides that access to that those programs. I look at ODOT. I look at DHR. And together, a partnership, I believe, would make both agencies stronger in providing that. I want to thank you for allowing me to testify. I've tried to keep it brief. I know you've got a long ways to go, and I would entertain any questions and try to answer them. I do want you to understand that I have not personally been in on any of the negotiating meetings that have been going on. I've been kept abreast of them. So you'll probably find I'll have to refer to other people for those answers, but I'll be happy to try.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
George.
Thank you. So it's just DHR has more experience and expertise when it comes to senior disabled transportation. Why shouldn't we move this money in existing and new money over to DHR?
Oh, gosh. Even though, like, every agency has their problems, I'll say that honestly, personally, they do have the experience of operating transportation systems, particularly the senior and disabled transportation, for how many years now? How long has, I'm going to say STF funds. I think that the combination of two, EHR delivers, as they said, they buy services. I see, and I think the commission agreed with me, they see DHR more in an oversight role.
was where they were coming from. I'm trying to keep personal issues out of this. Sometimes it's difficult.
Senator George.
So we were told as we were looking at this is that basically the involvement of ODOT is to receive a request, cut the check. In fact, initially it was described as we were taking $300,000 to cut 90 checks or something like that. And there really wasn't much involvement in what was happening because you have a basic formula that just says send so much money to these people, here's what the population is. Yet you have somebody over the HR who is personally involved with the problems of the people who are going to need to fly that transportation. But one of the things I noticed in your testimony, that you did have, with the limited ODOT administration on your second page, was 30%. So you are still kind of thinking along the line of setting a maximum amount. Am I reading the proper one?
I don't think you are. It doesn't say that on my company, sovereign senator. I'm sorry.
I'll read the 3-7 question. But at that time, you did have a bullet point that said limit. Okay. Administrative cost of blank amount. And you were thinking the same way, apparently, at that time.
Senator Kutub, Senator George from committee. At the time, okay, my mind has went back now to, you threw me there for a minute. I couldn't say that in the testimony. The reason was that.
Put words in your mouth, right?
Yeah. When we worked on that on, I believe it was May 2nd, or third, is what you're, May 4th, I believe, is the paper you're referring to. We had a real concern, many of the commission members did, about whether 2% was a realistic figure, but yet we understood where you were coming from in the bill. So at that time, we left that blank simply for that reason. It was an issue that, like I said, we felt maybe 2% might not be enough, but we realize there needs to be something there to cause these people to operate efficiently. Yes. So.
We have. I want to just tell the committee that we have 4 more people in 15 minutes. I don't want to cut off the discussion. I just wanted to try to get us.
Well, I'm to the point where if you ask me anymore, I'm going to have a glass of water. Can't talk anymore.
I'll talk about too. But in both the letters, you talk about accountability. And one of the things, of course, you attempted to do that was on the third page of the bill where it talks about the fact that they shall not exceed the 50% criteria. You heard the testimony from Mr. Zucker in which he talked about the range, you know, from 2-something to $11 or $14. Don't you think that's a really fair way to handle this? To make sure that those who provide efficient, those in the $2.50 to $3, $5 even, would be being rewarded for being efficient?
Senator Kutub, Senator George in committee. I guess I have a problem answering that question because I didn't have the opportunity to look and to research, you know, where this information came from, and I would be very hesitant to speak to it without, you know.
We do have a letter from even last session in which ODOT responded to Sheriff Cusa responded that those numbers are very similar to the numbers from season 97.
I guess the question, if I may, I'm looking at throughout the state as I look at transportation system, and without understanding those figures you were looking at, it's impossible to answer it because I'm wondering what was in those figures. I just don't have the knowledge to answer it.
Phyllis, there are a couple of things that stand out to me in your testimony, but one of the things I wanted to ask, on the second page, you talk about being concerned about the transition. And I'm wondering if you have an idea about what realistic date could be put in this bill to actually make a transition from the current system to a new system. October is something like mid-biennium or something, do you think help?
The transportation systems
And I speak basically from the rural areas, because I'll be really honest with you. It's very complicated when you get into mass transit districts, you know, limited transportation. But speaking from the rural perspective, each transportation system is set up to meet local needs. Set up very different in each, each. I would think that it would take at least a year to really do a minimum of a year to do this.
Okay. And then I just wanted to comment, because we've already had comment on helping with grant writing, it seems like the commission that's set up in this bill and is on record now that they should be assisting in the writing of grants. So you wouldn't have to wait in line for your grants to be written.
That's, I think, one would be very important that there be that expertise available for this, because it just isn't out there.
Yeah.
In these areas. It just isn't out there.
And then the other thing that I see, just in looking at your testimony, and I realize that this is a collaborative work. And in this body, you know, things change, as illustrated by the May letter and this. But it appears to me, by all of the things that are said in here, that there's been some heavy-duty lobbying going on. And nobody wants to be harmed. You know, let us keep our peace. Be sure to protect our peace. You know, and then whatever you can do for somebody else, fine. But we want to keep our piece of the action. And this bill clearly is based upon need. So the question that any of this is based upon, you know, reconfiguring and not meeting needs of seniors around the state is just an erroneous thought. So I thank you for your testimony and for the work that you're doing for the seniors in the Senators, or excuse me, Representative Kerber.
Hey, Minister, I actually wanted to pick up on that point of a couple of places. We talked about in your testimony percentage of we should be prioritizing based on the percentage of population needing services and grants targeting unmet needs, but no program would lose revenue. So what that sounds like to me is you just need more money totally for the program. Isn't that kind of what the bottom line of this is?
There's a QTAB Senate Showbacking Committee. Yes.
Yeah.
Let me use Harney County again as an example. We've got 10,000 square miles, if you can visualize it. You've all seen it on the map.
Mm-hmm.
We've got roughly 1,300 seniors, and I'm sorry I can't give you an accurate figure on the disability population. We have very little medical services in Harney County, so it involves not only covering 10,000 square miles, it involves outside of that area on a regular basis, 132 miles. We like to say we're 132 miles from nowhere, and we are. It's important that there is stable funding there to meet those needs. Population-wise, if you do strictly a population formula, you don't get much.
Well, that's what I was thinking. If you're talking about the percentage of population needing services, my guess is you're going to be directing more money back to the metro areas, because you're going to have a larger percentage, you're going to have a larger population base and more people that still need funding. And again, depending on the level of disability, you could have unmet needs of people actually on a bus route. But if a bus that has that particular ability to transport someone with that kind of disability, that's an unmet need. And I don't think you're automatically should be assuming that by saying unmet needs means places where there aren't transit options right now.
If you would look back at a letter that was sent out to, I believe, a number of you people when the commission worked on both bills, both this bill and 1349,
one of the...
3149?
31, I'm sorry, 3149. You will find that one of the recommendations that the commission had in both bills was that there be a base, if you'll remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Fisher?
A couple of comments. I think number one, this was $10 million or more money.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't supposed to be $10 million, including all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'll go back and look at Exhibit 10, which outlines $32 million plus the already transportation funding issues, you're going to see that a number of those things overlap. There's an awful lot of folks using OMAP, Medicaid transportation that also fit in as folks rehab, services, children and families, all these other things. The idea is we have so many, and this is what works in Roseburg. They more or less combine the monies available and brought them together. And that was, in reality, probably some of the things that also led them into trouble because they stepped out and they did something where they gathered most of the monies together and put them together and made and tried to make a rather efficient system that fulfilled the bulk of the needs in the community to the best of their ability. And they had it so it could be tailored. If somebody lived 5 blocks from where a bus normally stopped or where the van normally stopped and they couldn't get to that place reasonably, they dropped them off at their home. They went to their home and picked them up. They catered the thing to the needs, and it was working quite well. The problem was that there wasn't anything to direct the cooperation of different groups and different people in there. There were feelings that got ruffled. There were problems involved with the county and city and things like this. And this, I guess, is an attempt to try to take a situation whereby you've got 18 different programs going out there doing different things for largely the same general population, but nobody knows what the right hand is doing or the left hand is doing. And ultimately, whether, you know, we take a year to do it, whether it takes a biennium to do it, or even 3 years, or whatever the case might be to get something done, if these things could be integrated together to a large portion, maybe saving enough money out to do the little individual things that need to be done, and that so people can't get by with anything short of an actual automobile going there, where they actually need for their own family car or something, a certain amount of dollars to get to and from an appointment, I think we stand to make a whole lot better use of the dollars that we're using if everybody was more or less under one umbrella where we were looking at the whole total system, and I think that's what we were trying to attempt in here, and if they can keep that in mind as they testify and as they are working in groups or whatever the case might be to try to come to a situation here that would help the most people with the least amount of money. That's exactly what we're trying to do, and also giving them an influx of a little bit more money, which is exactly what you're saying, those that we need. And that's exactly where we feel that it would be best used in CHR, because regardless of where that money is split up and sent from, DHR is the one that's written all over all these services.
Mm-hmm.
Department of Transportation doesn't have these lists of people. They don't know where they're at. They don't know what their names are. They don't know whether they're mostly in the country or mostly in the city. All they're doing is splitting up a fund of money and taking a nice little cut in it in the process. And that's what we wanted to stop. We wanted to get it over into people that understand and know the group that needs this money and what their needs are and how it needs to be done. So, bear in mind, we're not trying to be fancy or anything else. We're trying to make a real stab at getting something that's just pretty much at loose ends around the state, tightened up, and so the money's really going where it's supposed to go and helping the people it's supposed to help.
Thank you. I apologize, but we're not going to be able to get the rest of you up here to testify. It's just a minute to 5 o'clock, and we aren't going to have a work session on the bill today, But I think this testimony has served to educate us a little bit better on this particular bill. And I would ask that if it comes up for another hearing and work session, that those of you who signed up to testify return. And I don't know whether there will be further work behind the scenes, if there can be any further compromise or working with us, that's appreciated. So we are going to Senator Fisher.
You know, some of these work groups, if they would get together a little more and try to sit down and see what's behind some of these issues and work with it, I think it would be a word to the wise.
Mm-hmm.
And we may be here from 764 standpoint just as guilty as anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that, including people, wasn't our intent. But we need to get together with all different people that are involved in this and not leave them out, not have this group or that group or one thing or another that's working on these. We need to sit down and try to find out how we can make a bill that does the job that we need to have done.
Mm-hmm. And I know change is hard.
And I can say that as a co-sponsor of 3149, whatever it is, as things as I've been sponsoring this 764 here.
Okay, well, I thank you all and apologize to those of you who came and sat through all of this and weren't able to testify, but maybe another time. We are adjourned.